News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
You're welcome to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. Coming up in the next half hour, the economy forges ahead, but savings remain high and credit flows are still relatively weak. We speak to an economist, Alan McQuaid, about the implications for the economy. And the venture capital investment prize for a startup that wants to take chance out of the recruitment process. And of course, we review latest developments on the markets. First, though, a look at some of the stories making headlines this morning, and turning to the lead story in the Irish Times, they still focus on the IPO for AIB. Joe Brennan writes that AIB will tell potential investors that its €8.6 billion bad loans problem will be mostly fixed within 3 years as it prepares to float on the Dublin and London stock markets within the next month. The bank's move to decisively tackle its trickier cases may include the sale of some loans to overseas buyers of distressed debt and companies seeking to take part in the state's expanded mortgage to rent scheme, executives at the bank signalled yesterday. That was in a press conference yesterday morning. The bank may also result in a greater level of repossessions against borrowers who refuse to engage with the bank. Turning to the business section of the Irish Times, Owen Burke-Kennedy writes that Ireland has taken its second highest spot to date in the world competitiveness rankings after being placed sixth. The survey of 63 countries compiled by the IMD Business School in Lausanne, Switzerland, linked Ireland's rise in the rankings to the state's recent economic performance, the ongoing level of inward investment, and what it described as a high level of business efficiency. The 2017 edition of the IMD survey, which is acknowledged as one of the most reputable barometers of international competitiveness, put Hong Kong on top again, with Switzerland and Singapore in second and third places. And finally, turning to the front page of the Irish Independent, Charlie Weston writes that the largest pension provider in the state is closing its staff pension scheme, prompting fears that traditional defined benefit plans are now set to disappear from the private sector. Unions at Irish Life want the law altered urgently in a bid to stop the company closing its defined benefit pension for 1,200 member staff. It comes despite the Irish Life scheme having a €150 million current surplus. The United Union's briefing notes says employees are forced to take all the risk while the company takes none. Irish Life says that it's engaging in an extensive consultation process with staff and their representatives and can't comment any further. And actually, finally, shareholders in ExxonMobil have backed a call for the company to publish an annual assessment of the impact of climate policies on its business, despite board opposition, in a sign of large investors' growing focus on the issue, the Financial Times reports this morning. The vote at the largest US oil and gas group suggests there will still be significant pressure from investors to encourage US companies to address climate change, even if President Donald Trump withdraws the company from the Paris Agreement. It's 6:37, you're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. As the Department of Finance and AIB up their efforts to attract investors to the bank based on its scale in the fast-growing Irish economy, the latest private sector credit statistics from the central bank show that lending activity is beginning to tick up here, but that in aggregate we still remain pretty cautious in terms of our saving and borrowing patterns. Alan McQuaid, economist with Merion Capital, joins us now on the line. Alan, I think that's a fair reflection, is it, that we still remain fairly cautious after the financial crisis in both our saving and borrowing habits at the moment?
I think it is, Vincent. I think the most stark figure that comes out from yesterday's data is the household deposits number, over €99 billion in deposits at the end of April. That's the highest level since February 2010. And we're now, according to the data, deposits exceed loans by over €10 billion in the banks. You go back to May 2008, at the height of the boom, we were, deposits were greater than the loans by €73 billion. So I think, yes, what you're seeing is, despite measly interest rates, people are still putting money on deposit. I think they're cautious. I think afraid of getting, once bitten, twice shy. Obviously, the austerity that we've, had to suffer in recent years, I think, has affected the psychology. And it's interesting in the terms of the whole debate about how the money should be spent, from the proceeds of the AIB sale. I mean, consumers, if you take consumers at face value, they're paying back their debt. They're not borrowing more. So I think, the argument is, if they're doing it, why shouldn't the government do it? So I can see both sides of the argument. I think there's a lot to be said for, investing in infrastructure. But the bottom line is, I mean, we had figures last week from the central bank showing that despite the fact that we're the fastest country in the EU in terms of paying back our personal debt, we're still the fourth highest indebted in the Eurozone. Only Denmark, Sweden and Holland are above us. And government debt is still over $200 billion. So there's a lot of money still owed, despite the improvement in the economy in terms of growth terms and the massive fall in unemployment.
Now, I suppose this trend where we're continuing to remain very cautious in terms of how much we're putting by, Alan, and as you say, getting almost nothing for it, it's good news and bad news for banks. On the one hand, this sheer volume of retail deposits is almost providing all the funding requirements of the retail banks at the moment. On the other, they would like us to be borrowing more, I presume.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think clearly the landscape has changed for the banks post the crisis. I mean, they're required to hold a lot more capital in reserve in terms, you know, to cope with any crisis down the road. And there's definitely, you know, a supply demand issue. I think the banks, you could argue, could be lending more, but there's no doubt there's a caution among investors. As I said, even with low interest rates, they're still willing to you know, leave money on deposit, which you could argue is a positive sign for the banks, that despite all the negative rhetoric that the banks have suffered in recent years, and, you know, finger blaming rightly or wrongly for, you know, by some members of the public for you know, for causing the financial crisis, you could argue that there's a lot of confidence in the banking sector given the level of deposits there.
Is it that, Alan, do you think, or is it that just people are so risk averse that even though they may not like their local bank anymore, fairly or unfairly, they want the least risky option when it comes to their savings, and they don't necessarily want to invest in equities or other assets?
Well, I think there's a point in that, Vincent, clearly. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, are still in negative equity, despite the improvement in house prices. A lot of people are still underwater, despite the improvement in the economy, because of the financial crisis. And I suppose you can understand that, you know, people want to remain cautious. They're afraid of getting hit, particularly in the uncertain backdrop. I mean, obviously Brexit is a big issue. We don't know what the fallout is going to be. But I think a lot of people, you know, the argument is that Ireland would be the one that will suffer most within the EU from the Brexit situation. So we'll have to wait and see. So I think people just don't want to rush in and expose themselves to more debt, you know, because of what's gone on in recent years.
Turning to the borrowing side, Alan, I heard Mark Burke, the Chief Financial Officer for AIB, yesterday saying that they believe that net lending, that they will return to net lending growth this year. And we do see the figures for April that the drawdowns on consumer loans exceeded repayments quite significantly. The most significant excess of drawdown of loans rather than repayments for about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I think there's clearly an improvement there. I think you can also see from the figures yesterday from the Banking Federation, Payments Federation, which showed that, you know, mortgage approvals are up year on year. So what I'd say is I think there's life there, but we need to do a lot more in terms of, you know, putting credit into the economy if, you know, if Ireland is to achieve its you know, to reach its you know, potential over the long run. I mean, clearly the economy is doing well at the moment, but it needs credit to survive going forward, and I think we need a lot more credit in the economy than we have at the moment.
And and as you say, that may involve two principal drivers. One, the banks providing more of it, and two, consumers having more of an appetite to take it up.
Indeed, yeah.
Okay, Alan McQuaid of Merion Capital, thanks indeed for joining us this morning. We still remain a pretty cautious bunch, but I suppose if the aggregate amount of consumer debt is coming down, that is a good thing in general. Now, the nature of the recruitment and job application markets could change radically if Opening.io's plans bear further fruit. The startup company, housed at the NDRC Accelerator in Dublin, came out on top at the NDRC's annual investor day yesterday and won €30,000 in additional funding as a result. Opening.io's chief executive and joint founder, Andrea Wade, joins us in studio. Andrea, firstly, congratulations on beating your, no doubt, very high-quality competitors to get that €30,000 funding. We'll talk about that in a minute. What exactly is the process that Opening.io has developed for the recruitment market?
So, very simply, we built algorithms that match people to jobs. What we do is we either find all your CVs and we plug into them and we find the best possible candidate for a particular job opening, or we plug into your already existing database. This is what we do best. We work best with really large companies that have hundreds of thousands or millions of resumes. So imagine a recruiter performs a search and you have 1.2 million CVs. This is an actual case of someone that we're working
1.2
with.
1.2 million CVs,
yeah,
for one job.
for a database.
Okay,
right?
Yeah. Oh, for a database, obviously, yeah, sorry.
And you perform a search and you might be looking for an iOS developer, somebody who codes, you know, apps for iPhones. And you get 50,000 results back. Who do you call first? This is where we come in and we tell you, call this person and this person and this person first because they might be off the market very, very soon. So that's the value that we bring.
So this is at the very early stage of the selection process, pre-screening, I think it's called, whereby you go through that huge database of CVs that you have to work out who do we even make contact about calling in for interview or having a chat online or whatever. And your system brings artificial intelligence to that rather than human intelligence.
That's we aid or augment human intelligence. Obviously, we're not getting rid of humans. But yeah, we sit before sourcing. So between sourcing and interviewing, that's where we are. We can do this in your within your existing database, but also new CVs coming in. So we powered Career Zoo this year. It's a career fair. And we gave our matching technologies to all the participating exhibitors because all of them get a lot of CVs on today and then it might take them a couple of weeks to go through them. With us, it's literally a matter of seconds. You search, you get your response.
Now, before we get to the benefits for employers and recruitment firms generally from your process, what does this mean for people who are actually applying for jobs, whose CVs are being sent in or are on this database? I see that your system basically cuts out the CV noise, the candidate noise. In other words, does that mean all the waffle that we generally put into our CVs, your artificial intelligence, your machine learning will cut right through that?
That's what we're aiming for.
Oh dear.
Absolutely. But there's good news as well. You know, a lot of up to 75% of people that apply to a job are rejected. And very often they're rejected because they might not have the right keywords and whatnot. We really look at what we do is concept mining. We really look at overall all your experience, all your knowledge, and if you are relevant to a job, we will surface you. So there's good news in there as well.
So there's less chance of falling through the gaps if you
exactly.
are actually qualified for the job. Does
exactly.
this mean that candidates are going to have to learn how the algorithms work, the kind of keywords that are out there that artificial intelligence will pick up to allow their CV, their application get selected?
So that's today's process. And today when we, you know, build a CV for a particular job, what we do is usually we look at the job description and we pretty much take all those keywords and put them in our CV and hopefully we get matched. The process that we do goes beyond that. We don't really look at keywords. Again, we look at concepts. And even more than that, we look at your CV. And if you have links to portfolio links, if you're a programmer, you might have links to platforms like GitHub that are code repos. We go there as well automatically. We take samples of your code. We bring them back into a dashboard and we add that to a match score as well.
Does your system go into people's social media databases to see whether what they're saying there matches what they have in their applications?
We do not go into social media databases or platforms. It's something... It's a conscious decision. It's not something that we want to do. We will look at your a LinkedIn. We will look at portfolios and so on. But what you do in your private life, the things that you tweet about, it's not something that we want to plug into.
Briefly tell us about Opening.io. You're a Romanian yourself, but you've been living here for a long time.
Yeah.
When did you start the business and have you already got customers?
So I've been living here 15 years now. We started a business about 2 years, 2.5 years ago. We have paying customers. We launched officially last September and we're in full sales mode right now. We have the product. We have the technology. Our R&D processes will, you know, continue until whatever. But we are selling right now.
And I think you've 6 people employed. What will this €30,000 investment now from Enterprise Ireland and private backers mean for the company in terms of growth, possible more employment?
It's runway. You know, your job as a young company is to stay alive. So it means, you know, we just hired a business development director. So it means money towards her salary. It means a lot. It's another 3-4 months of runway for us.
And I presumed you applied your own logarithms to the applicants for your own company.
We did.
Andrea Wade of Opening.io, congratulations and thanks for joining us this morning. It's 6:54 and David Bergen of Goodbody joins us on markets. David, markets generally still nudging into record territories, but there's little enough significant movement and some signals, particularly from a banking conference in New York yesterday, that there are concerns out there about the lack of drivers.
Yeah, we had about 7 up days in the S&P in a row, and then we've had 2 wobble days basically. And the banks yesterday, the US banks, were lamenting the fact that, you know, we've had this low volatility because that means people aren't out there buying and selling equities, so they're not making profits. But conversely, and really strangely, on the flip side of that, is that people are out there, they're worried about geopolitical risk, especially in the US. So there's no mergers or takeovers taking place either. So the banks are losing on both ends. So normally they're making money on one side of things, but you know, that's not happening. So they gave, I suppose, just a bit of a warning that quarter two is going to be a little bit weaker. And obviously then you saw share price reactions, 2-3% sell-offs across the board in the US stocks.
And broadly speaking, is there analysis that one of the principal reasons for this, I suppose, lull or growing concern is just that the momentum behind Donald Trump's administration coming in and the likelihood of tax reductions and regulatory reform just seems to have run out of steam?
Yeah, so it's important to remember, like, tax reform hasn't been factored into any economist's forecast for this year. So because nobody knows what the policy is, but it's expected to be out there. So that's why markets have been drifting a little bit and going higher, and they've been fairly, you know, fairly low volatile kind of scenarios there. But on the other side of it then, you know, what's going to happen to, you know, I suppose the US interest rate? So you're expecting that to go up with policy reforms, with infrastructure spending, with a growing economy in the US to keep that economy in control. But you're not seeing all the signs of that. So you're seeing job growth looking strong, but on the inflation side, it's a little bit weaker. So there's mixed signals. So you're not seeing US 10-year yields pushing towards 3% like all the economists are saying at the start of Trump's reign. You're basically seeing it stuck in around 2.2%. Needs to go a little bit higher to help the banks. It makes them more profitable.
Well, we are seeing some volatilities in the oil price, all sorts of factors affecting it.
Yeah, so oil had significant moves there in the last number of days, like big sell-offs and a little bit of a rebound there this morning, I can see. We're selling off, which strangely enough, I suppose OPEC are compliant on their production cuts. There's a little caveat in there, though. Iran are allowed to increase their production. Nigeria have been allowed to increase their production. And Libya have got one of its biggest oil fields back on production. So, you know, that's worried the market. And then on the flip side, then, there's a few reports flying around that US production could hit 10 million barrels a day by the end of this year. Now, you haven't seen that since 1970 in the US. So, you know, that gets them up to, you know, like probably one of the top three major players with Russia and Saudi then on oil production.
So that'll keep a cap on oil prices likely. Sterling likely to continue on a weak slide until at least the election this day week in the UK?
Yeah, so sterling has been a lot weaker in the last few days, considering that Theresa May has lost such a lead in the polls. Again, like, the market is, I suppose, hoping for a Theresa May majority to give it, I suppose, the ability to go and negotiate Brexit. But she's losing way, and, you know, that's being factored into the sterling moves. And there is uncertainty there now. Yep.
Briefly, you're with Goodbody. You are one of the players in the AIB IPO. I suppose you just want to tell people who may be thinking, retail investors in particular, who may be thinking of investing, they will get much more detailed information from the bank in the prospectus.
So Goodbody, we're advisor to AIB. So look, we're restricted on what we can say, and most people are. So you're not going to see much coming out in the next couple of weeks. But in, you know, mid-June, you're going to see a prospectus, and that'll have an awful lot more information. So just be patient and you'll get a lot of detail then.
Bide your time. Yeah. David Bergen of Goodbody, thanks as always for joining us. That's it from Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall for this morning. I'll be back with bulletins at 7:30 and 8:30. If you've missed any of today's programme, you can catch up on podcast on newstalk.com later in the day.
News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.